This is 1UP Network Radio, and you're listening to this week's 1UP Yours podcast. I'm your host, Garnet Lee. Got the gang here, including, first time on the mic, Mr. Andrew Pfister.
It's actually my second time, but it's my first time with all of you guys.
And oh, yeah.
Very excited to be here.
You can tell in his voice. I'm very excited to be here today. This is not the Larry King Show, man.
We're glad you're excited.
That's good. Thanks.
Yeah.
And that's John.
Good times. Good
hello.
Times.
And
Luke from 1UP News again.
Again.
Sorry.
Oh, no, you've become a regular guest.
And now you know the Shane Club will be very upset.
It's like we don't know anyone else.
I think they just ostracized us.
Who?
The rest of else.
There's a hole, though, next to me. There's no,
Shane.
Giant PS3 fanboy.
And given that we did want to talk about the PS3 again today, I am sad he's not going to be here to defend Blu-ray.
I can be Shane.
You want to be Shane?
I love the PS3.
Blah, 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 blah.
All right, Ken, thank you very much. And now, moving on.
I'll shut up now.
Hey, let's dive into the what you've been playing. Who wants it? Andrew? Skip? You want to jump out there?
Brain Age. Every day? Playing lately. Well, I try to every day. I feel really guilty when I miss a day because the guy yells at me. It makes me feel sad.
How old is your brain?
I did too yesterday. Last time I checked was 27, which is my actual age.
Wow.
Oh, you're above your age. You're doing better than your actual age.
Yeah, unless you are 27.
You just turned 31 for the 8th time, right?
All right, so that shit actually comes out next week, right?
Yeah.
So I can finally get a copy and, tell you all
I thought it was out this week.
Oh, wait, no, yeah.
Did it come out this week? Yeah, it came out this week.
Oh, so I can go over to
EB. You go out now.
Like at lunch?
Go on.
We need to go to EB today.
Okay.
Because I need a copy.
I want Greek, though.
We can do both.
The GNC is not in San Francisco.
So
what are you talking about?
I don't know what that means.
Are you still totally hooked
Greek
on Oblivion?
Never mind.
All right.
Am I totally hooked on Oblivion? Yes.
Still.
Although.
Would you play something else?
Well, I did. I've been playing Brain Age, and I've been playing Field Commander again. Oblivion, I have reached a point, I think, where it is starting to ruin it. And I blogged about this, and Tommy D100 told me I was making ridiculous excuses because all of you mock me for playing Oblivion so much. See, I've made notes this morning.
Are those crib notes?
I make crib notes so that I can remember who it is that's abusing
John
me on my blog.
John has very attractive handwriting, too.
I do. So, Tommy, I'm not making ridiculous excuses, but thank you for the advice.
that's a game-winning tip.
But,
thank you for the advice.
Some other people actually suggested that that there are other ways to get around the lockpicking, which is what's driving me crazy, is that I'm at several points on different story strands in Oblivion where I have to pick a hard lock, and it's driving me crazy. And it goes from beautifully placed, fantastic gameplay to just really annoying, messing around. And I can't do it, and I hate it.
Are you doing the manual, or are you trying the auto lock picking?
I try both, and, I'll go and I'll buy 50 picks and burn through 30 of them getting through a door, a very hard lock that I need for a quest. So I'm going through the Dark Brotherhood quest, the Thieves quest, and the main quest all at the same time. And all of them are at a point now where they're hindered by a lock that I can't open. And I don't have any picks, and I'm not far enough in the Thieves Guild to be able to get them automatically. But I'm told that there is a Daedric quest where the prize is a skeleton key that opens anything and can't break. So tonight when I get home, that's what I'm going to be doing.
Patrick can clue you in on that because he's totally down. He's got that. He's actually done that line.
Because I'd been juicing my alteration skills, hoping that at some point that I would just be able to go, and doors would open at me. And that's not working. But I was also told, this is what happens when you blog. People do actually give you really good advice. If you work your way through the Mage's Guild, up to the point where you can go to the Arcane University, you can buy a lockpicking spell and then juice it up to whatever level your magicka will let you go. And so that's another potential option.
I've never felt more out of the loop in my entire life.
That was just me speaking to people that knew what the hell I was talking about. And to everyone else, it just sounded like gibberish,
and
I'm sure.
And now what I've been playing, I will explain in detail the mob at the end of World of Warcraft. To further alienate and have you change the dial.
Dude, you are a raiding fool. I got to tell you guys, if you're listening, I walk by Luke's office at least a couple of times a week. He's sitting there at night playing, what's the raid?
World of Warcraft. We're finishing up AQ. We're working on C'Thun right now.
Right, so like, was that English?
Yeah, it's actually C'thun. It's really interesting because it could have tied into the news part of the segment. C'thun's like this old god. He's the current end boss of World of Warcraft. He's the current like big thing that no one can beat. And earlier this week, a big group of the player base, the end game raiding base, started to lash out at Blizzard because everyone's run the math on the mob and like the way he spawns and have like parsed his data, and he's actually mathematically unkillable by a 40-man raid group in the best gear in the game. He's mathematically unkillable. So,
what the hell?
Exactly, what the hell. So, and the sort of irony behind it
is that...
We're
nerding out today.
Is that two developers on World of Warcraft, Tiggle and Fuhrer, were both old EQ players who were heavily critical of SOE in EverQuest. Mm-hmm. So now Tiggle and Fuhrer are developers at Blizzard and are seeing the same...
Wasn't that a kid's show?
Yeah. And are seeing the same criticisms levied at them by the player base of World of Warcraft. So there was this big, like, sort of lashing out, and Blizzard said they fixed it. They said, okay, we hot fixed it, but they didn't. So the story continues, and, you know, it's... To giant nerds, it's pretty fascinating.
It is.
So that's
giant nerd.
That's what I played a lot of World of Warcraft this week. I went back and actually last night played Black for a little while.
Really?
Just, yeah, I talked with Mark about it, and he was, like, the person in EGM who liked it. And for what I wanted out of Black delivers sort of like, I just wanted just to blow stuff up, and that's all it is, and I like it. I have no problem with it.
You know, I loved it, but I didn't love it. Right.
Ryan, it's visceral and pleasant enough for 10, 15 minutes, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's like.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like anti-Brain Age.
Yeah. Yeah, my son's starting to get, he's only 2.5, but he's starting to want to play video games, so he's really into Burnout and Amped, which he quite likes.
Wow.
So if you look at my gamer card on my blog, that's why Burnout and Amped keep popping up, is because he wants to play. The other day, I noticed he'd obviously pestered his mom to play Burnout, and I hadn't got any achievements. And I looked at my my card on my Xbox page, and an achievement had appeared for Burnout, which means my 2.5-year-old had got an achievement for me. So
that's awesome.
That's how I'm juicing my gamer score right now.
There are achievements
for
Return to Game.
Hey, since you're a Warcraft guy, what do you think of the coming change in Battlegrounds?
That's interesting, but the sort of problem it's going to present is on high population servers that already have lengthy queues for PvP. It's like...
So for people who don't know, introduce that real quick.
Okay, the story sort of started to emerge, and those, you know, WoW-holics have sort of seen this coming, but Blizzard is going to sort of, in the next two content patches, which really is probably in the next, I mean, let's 6 months development cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to make these PvP instances, which are called Battlegrounds, serve as cross-server hubs. So where I'm on one server, I'm on a server called Eridar, I'll be playing player versus player against players from Aenor, which is another server in WoW. So instead of like just being relegated to your population, which could be 8,000 people or it could be 20,000 people on your server to play with, it's going to be opened up in like 16 server clusters. So you'll be able to compete with like the best geared players from all over.
Okay, so as a WoW guy, what do you think?
I think it's cool. They're going to sort of introduce like a laddering system like Battle.net. But the reason I play World of Warcraft isn't for the PvP. It's really for the PvE content, because the way the PvP in World of Warcraft is done is it's just so heavily gear-based. And like players from my guild, we all have the best gear in the game. So if we're playing against guys who just PvP and have the PvP gear, it's just we crush them just by brute strength. I mean, they might be better players, they might have better strategies, but the gear separation is so great that what you're going to see is these uber guilds who are geared very well still rising to the top. And that's something that Blizzard has tried to address with their itemization formula,
uh-huh.
Which is non-linear. So as instances get harder, the loot gets worse.
What? Wait. As instances get harder...
As WoW's endgame gets harder, the loot does not scale with the difficulty, so...
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, so literally, like, as you're killing these harder and harder bosses, the level of an upgrade that you're getting is smaller. It's a giant problem that Blizzard has. I've asked them many times to talk to them
so
about
they
it.
Still got some balance tweaks, and this isn't going to fix it?
Definitely not going to fix it.
All right, cool enough.
What are you playing?
So I'm still playing Lara. Totally love it when I have time. I'm only... I'm in that Africa section, so what's that about? Level 5, which is just totally blows me away how great the environments are. I so love that game. I really, really, really love that game. And if you are not playing it and you liked adventure games, just go get the damn thing. And the other game I started playing is for review, I'm doing the next Ace Combat. And I've only played about 3 missions in. It's very Ace Combat. but I'm kind of wondering.
They all are.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't changed.
It
that
really
much
hasn't
in principle.
Changed. So
I never understand why there are so many of them, because they don't sell particularly well, do they?
They do, because they hit their niche group, because there's no competition there anymore.
Right.
What was the one that was on Dreamcast that was like very short-lived as kind of competition? Remember that?
I don't remember.
Well, someone will have the answer for us on the forums, of course.
Tell us.
But that was pretty good. There's not that much diversity in the game. Someone's got to figure out.
They tried to change it once with Ace Combat 3, but
right.
only the Japanese version. That's awesome, like anime story in this.
Yeah, it got a bit, because like, yeah, Namco went through this phase of trying to put stories in all of their games. There was like
it has. And what's really cool that I'm just caught the very first version of is that as you play the game, it's watching the way you play and deciding whether you're playing it nobly or cutthroat or just like as a straight up soldier. And depending on how you're playing it, different aces from the enemy come out to meet you. And the aces all have like this cinematic intro and have a lot of personality, and they're much harder pilots to shoot down. So we'll see. I mean, that could really develop it. It's kind of interesting. So that's what I'm playing. Let's run through real quick to let you guys know what's coming up for the rest of the time here. We're going to do reader mail real quick next, then we're going to have a break. Our round table is, do we have the pre-E3 blues? And then at the end, we're going to wrap up with the news. And yes, I will be covering the Dreamfall review. We'll be talking about that, the PS2 price drop, and some other cool stuff. So let's hop into the reader mail. And what we want to do today is get back to John's question.
So my question last week was, why do you want to stand in line for a PS3? Some people misinterpreted that question as having some bias to it.
Really?
Yes. But the idea wasn't to say that anything is better than anything else, but just that the 360 is out, and in the past we have known why we stand in line for new console launches. And given this, the way things are right now, why do you want a PS3? We got a really good response, and surprisingly, it was predominantly negative. A lot of people said that they aren't going to stand in line for a PS3.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that the response was negative, it was just like a negative answer. It's no,
yeah,
we're not going to do this in line.
You know, Schwan, for example, told me that he would be standing in line so he could sell one on eBay.
That was a lot of people that.
I think I posted, I agree with this post.
Yeah, and then went on to tell me that the 360 bankrupted his ass.
Was that in quotes?
It is in my notes.
Luke?
We almost had Diet Coke on the table right there.
So, Schwan, I'm sorry to hear about your, you know, bankrupted ass, but you know, I hope you're doing okay. IXL always told me that this is Sony's last chance with me. Before I bought the 360, I might have paid up to $600 for a PS3, but now that I see all that the 360 can do, I won't pay anything over $450 for a PS3. He didn't actually sort of say why 450 was the cap for him, but that sort of sentiment seems
well,
to come
it,
up
right
a lot.
There. Ken's going to make it $449.99.
Mm-hmm. I think, but the 360 is definitely affecting sort of people's perception of what the PS3's quality. And I think, you know, it's got to be a lot better. Tenshi Mi said that right now he thinks it's too early to gauge, and doesn't really think he can make a decision until after E3. That was something that came up a lot as well, that there's just not enough information about the PS3 right now, which to me says, Sony, what the hell are you doing? You know, the thing comes out in less than 6 months.
So yesterday we're down at EA for their pre-E3 event, and they're talking about this very subject because they had no PS3 on display. None. No PS3 game on display at all. And they were cautioning us, well, you know, don't take this back and blow it out of proportion and be thinking, oh, well, there's no games there.
Luke
so
is
obviously
his hands
it's not ready
right now.
And I'm thinking to myself, you know, a lot of times when people make excuses like that up front, there's a damn good reason for it.
Well, a damn good reason right now is that none of them have final dev kits. They're not getting them until June, July.
So that is going to be a problem.
So just to, I mean, you said like people are going to be concerned.
You can hear it in his voice.
Shane, hurry, come back. Yeah, so people are concerned that they're going to wait till E3 and they want to see what happens at E3 because they can't make a decision right now.
A lot of video at E3.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you really think that E3 is going to be the big giant tipping scale in your wallet that goes, here, have $449.99 for this IXL Always guy. Like, do you think that's going to be it? Because if you're just going to show video, it's not going to be. You're effed, and your holiday season's effed, and you just gave Microsoft a 2-holiday season lead. And the thing is, too, is that Microsoft isn't capitalizing because Microsoft has been relying on weak software and we've said this before, they've been relying on weak software, and seeing what they're going to show at E3, like, I don't know if that's enough anyway to get people to come back to the register. So if you manage to have a 2-holiday lead on a company and still get beat, are you kidding? Mm-hmm. Really? Like, I don't think that this...
I disagree with you. I think Microsoft's got some stuff that you're going to see that once the hubbub over the other consoles dries down, you're going to be going, wow, this is some totally kick-ass software.
Well, and now to counter my own point, the stuff...
That's very good.
Right. He doesn't need us this week.
The stuff,
we have the Garnet Show, now we have a Luke Show.
The stuff that I expect to see at E3 from Microsoft, I'm extremely excited about. But... I'm not going to see it this holiday season.
The conversation that we had, I can't remember, it was someone in the office. At this point with the 360, we had a pretty good idea what was coming. Whether you liked it or not, you knew what was coming down the pipe. Right now, we have a pretty good idea, even if we're just guessing, educated guesses as to what's going to be shown at E3 on 360 in terms of strong first-party franchises and strong third-party franchises.
Right.
Name some PS3 games that you know are very likely to be at E3.
Well, definitely Warhawk.
Warhawk is a game that came out 10 years ago. You cannot tell me that is a strong first party franchise. They ignored it for 10 years.
For first party?
Hey, I'm just saying.
Killzone, which, you know, may be playable.
I don't think
but
so.
Didn't
On
sell,
your road trip to fantasy land.
But we know there might be a Ratchet. We don't know there's going to be a Jack. We don't know there's going to be a Sly. We don't, you know, GT maybe, you know. But the attitude seems to be that, you know, GT, you get it when they can be bothered to, you know, they don't plan it. It happens when it happens. Other stuff. There's no, you know, obviously everyone's talking about GTA, but we don't know what's going to happen. We know Metal Gear's probably coming, but it's not going to be this year. You know, it's right now. What could they roll out in their press conference that's going to make everyone go, oh, now we get it?
I don't think that there's something. The war for this generation, which is next generation, which is confusing.
The war for this generation
begins holiday 2007. Mm-hmm. Until then, it's just this long prologue from a Robert Jordan book that a lot of people are going to get sick of reading.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting? So here's two things without getting about specific titles from pre-E3 stuff, so we can talk about that in a minute. What we've seen, it's taking a long time to develop games. And this stuff that you're going to see as Christmas on 360 is not really second gen. It's really like gen and a half. And even at gen and a half, it's remarkable to me how much more polished some of these games for 360 that you're going to see at Christmas look. And I think it's going to be strong, strong competition. Mm-hmm. It's going to surprise you.
Too Human looks great. I'm sure Mass Effect's going to be great.
Is Mass Effect this year, though?
I think so, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's supposed to be. I mean,
I've just sort of, since it was announced, I just had thought 2007, just because the way it looked, I was like, there's no way it's going to be ready.
I think what you're seeing is developers are starting to get comfortable. Let's say some of that for our second part. next week's question. What creates brand loyalty? I threw this out there.
You threw that out there. So,
I think it's a great question. Because I'm not going to answer it this week.
Garnet's pointing at me. I have a few more.
I think
some of the points that came up actually speak to the inspiration for the question, and that is that there's a sense people seem to be getting that Sony, particularly in the US, has this assumption that they have this massive brand loyalty around PlayStation, and I think
they do.
Whether it's just sort of, you know, fanboys, pro and negative, discussing the point, there is this sort of perceived arrogance at Sony right now that they can slap PlayStation on something and everyone's going to pounce on it regardless of the price. And some of the points, Skett says, no, he won't be going to PS3. Even if it was available at launch, Metal Gear Solid 4 wouldn't get me to buy a PS3, especially if the price is as high as rumored. A lot of people are very price sensitive. There were a couple of people that were positive. JCS440 said he will wait in line for PS3 because of the possibility of a Final Fantasy VII remake.
I'm not talking about this.
Interesting.
And then a bunch of people have said that they didn't get a 360. They weren't prepared. They weren't impressed with the stuff. Chaos Soldier 87 said he wasn't impressed with the lineup. He will buy a PS3 because of the Sony-specific franchises like SOCOM, Gran Turismo, Final Fantasy, Devil May Cry, and Metal Gear Solid, and he also cited PSP connectivity as a big deal for him.
He's the one.
There's the one. Hey, so, you know, kind of on your point, also, Chris P., did you have Chris P.'s note down here? Because it's kind of cool. He picked up on what you're talking about, contrasting hardcore gamers versus the, you know, the big mass market gamer. He says, but there are people out there, a great thong of your stereotypical, yo, you got that Madden casual gamer who only know, quote, PS3 is coming, and it's like totally going to be better than PS2, dude, and that's all they need to know to get excited. I don't know that I agree with that completely anymore. I don't know.
You don't think those people are still out there?
I think they're still out there, but I think that the more they see... First of all, Xbox laid a good base in North America. This is not Japan. There are most of us who have friends who are casual gamers who have Xboxes. And they've played the machine, and they're comfortable with it. So it's not just a PS2 world. Maybe in Japan, but not here.
I mean, the PS2, I mean, like, the arrogance is somewhat warranted. I mean, there's 100 million PS2s in the world.
It's a hell of a number.
40 million of them in the US, or more than that, 50 million now. They're going to sell another 5 or 6 this year.
Someone joked with me one day about that. I said that to them. They're like, yeah, but how many of them are replacements for one that broke?
Right. So true. There's that, and there's people buying a slim one as well as a fat one.
Right.
And, you know, so it's not 40 million different people necessarily.
That's another good reason that people gave not to buy a PS3 at launch. That they're afraid that the first run is going to be not so sound.
What, like the PS2?
Right, Jason GW here, he says that if Sony taught me nothing else, they taught me that launch hardware and games are shit, and early adopters get screwed on price, selection, and quality.
Could we book him for next week? That would be awesome. Jason, send me a message on the board.
He's all like, no thanks.
Give him Shane's phone number.
God. Yeah, you definitely had fun with it. All right, so... Do we have any others you wanted to get in there?
No, I think overwhelmingly though there were more people saying no than yes. Which
yes.
I'm not sure if that was just anti-Sony fanboys pouncing on the opportunity, but I didn't get that sense. There was some accusations thrown around. There were some implications that my question was biased. And to those people, I ran the official PlayStation magazine for 5 years.
He has Sony tattooed on his neck. It's right there. It's like a choker. All right, so now that we've talked about brand loyalty, it was a great lead-in, actually. Tell us about brand loyalty. What creates it? Why does it matter? How much is there in the video games? Is it different for video games than it is for...
Why are you loyal to a company of your choice?
Yeah. Give us the scoop. We'll pick up on it next week. And in a minute, we'll come back from the break talking about the pre-E3 leaks. If you like what you're listening to on the One Up Yours podcast, we also do other shows on the One Up Radio Network, including the recently started CGW podcast. You might want to check that out. It's run by CGW's own Mr. Jeff Green, and he is the authoritative source in the community for PC games info. So give it a listen and check it out. You're listening to the One Up Yours podcast on the One Up Radio Network. And we love E3, don't we? I mean, who doesn't love going to LA and, you know, walking around a crowded, loud, obnoxious convention hall?
Either drunk or hungover.
Yeah. How many times have you been, Luke?
This is going to be my second year, actually.
Yeah?
I have not been that many times.
Wow. So you don't have the blues yet, right?
Not the, oh, God, we have to go to E3 to work blues. Mm-hmm. I have the,
yeah,
oh, God.
Work.
Yeah, we can't talk about all kinds of stuff blues.
Skip?
This will be my 7th or 8th. I've only missed one since 97, so 8th.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
I missed
10 million.
I've been to all of them except one. I missed one.
Wow.
My first marriage.
Oh. All right then. This is number 8 for me. So yeah, we kind of have the blues. Sorry, I mean.
Is this the 10th or the 11th E3?
This might be the 11th.
Okay, I've been
95
to 10.
Probably the first one.
I've been to 10 then.
All right, so what we wanted to get into is that every year, for those of you who are listening and don't know this, before E3, the publishers take a long time showing us stuff beforehand, which is kind of a mixed bag because they start to show us stuff, but then about halfway into it, they say, but you need to come back to the booth because we got this other great thing.
And the point of it is actually linked originally to print pubs because of the lead times. I mean, if you get it in now, there's a good chance that you'll be able to squeeze stuff in so that the issues that hit close to E3, but increasingly... It's difficult just because of the dominance of online and the way they want to get stuff out closer to the actual event that we're tending to see a bit of a mixed bag. And like this week, I mean, the sense that I've got from all the guys coming back from all these events is that nothing was really shown. I mean, the big one is usually EA.
They're getting more guarded.
In the past, EA have rolled out 15, 20 products, most of which you expect, some of which you don't. It was EA yesterday, and you went Garnet, how many?
So they showed us video of a couple of games in the theater ahead of time, and then the actual like product demonstration was 5 games.
Right.
That was it.
God.
5 games.
I don't think they're all announced stuff.
I mean, they're all announced stuff, so I don't think that there's any like crime saying which titles they were. They were the 2 football games, like you'd expect. Mm-hmm. Crysis, which, you know, wow. More on that to come. The Battlefield futuristic 2142 game, and the conversion of the strategy game for 360 Battle for Middle-earth.
I actually kind of think this is... I'm going to play devil's advocate, and I think this is good because it means that we're all going to go to E3, and the coverage you see from the event itself that week is going to be less cynical and more enthusiastic, because you're going to have a bunch of journalists walking around who are seeing things that they've not seen before. Whereas for the past, particularly the last 5 years, everyone's wandering around in this sort of cynical, jaded stupor where they're like, I already previewed it. I saw it a month ago. And that doesn't do anyone a service.
It really doesn't. You're right.
I kind of agree with you, because the first 2 E3s I went to, it was like that. Nobody knew what was announced.
You want to
like
go totally to... I want to go to Sony's booth and to Sony's press conference and for them to blow me away. I know we were kind of saying that they've not handled it well, but if they handle the show itself right, all will be forgiven, because it'd be like, oh, wow, there was all this stuff and we had no idea and it was a big surprise. And the surprise is going to generate press, not just in the games press. It's going to generate stuff on CNN and the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and the Today Show and all that stuff. And it's going to be, there's new things happening in gaming and people are excited and, you know, they're going to wheel us out on these things because, you know, we do tend to get brought in as the, you know, the credible source. All press outlets in gaming, you know, get wheeled out to say, why is this year cool? And this is going to factor into it.
EA gets that because, excuse me, one of the things that they did this time to get us excited is they showed off like a teaser of this new animation technology, and they wrapped it up by saying, and we're going to have in our press booth this animation technology on display for you to check out, play with, and learn about, and see how it's going to make next-gen gaming really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something like the same thing you're talking about. Here's why next-gen's cool, and come to E3 and check it out.
Here it comes. Okay, so that you're having these events. Like, I went to a couple events earlier this week, and like we've reported, like nothing was really shown. It was like the Microsoft Japan event. It was like an event that was not really an event. And while I understand the idea, and it could be too, because this will be my second E3, and mm-hmm. I have, you know, maybe not the jade. Believe it or not, maybe not as jaded about E3 as some of the other guys. But why have the pre-E3 events don't seem to serve much of a purpose to us in online then, other than like getting to go monkey around real quick, you know, played some game based on a movie.
Miami Vice.
Yeah.
You loved it.
Yeah.
You totally loved it.
You were into it.
I just love tubs.
Well, I think some companies get it better than others, but ultimately you do get a sense sometimes that they forget what the press actually represents. It's not Luke Smith going to an event to represent 1UP. It's Luke Smith going to be the voice that speaks to 3 million people that read 1UP. You know, it's... if you've got nothing to say to those 3 million people, then don't say anything.
Right. You know, I'm not so much jaded about E3. As a matter of fact, I still love going to E3. I love the excitement of it. I love going out and looking at the booths. I love seeing the games and being in the middle of all that. The thing I get most cynical about is the freaking attendance. And every year they promise us it's going to be better. And every year it is harder to walk down the damn aisles because there's a million people there.
That was the thing that I encountered last year that was a big problem. It was the whole idea of, like, really? You? Like, really? Lines? Really? Really? Like, we're not standing in lines this year, right? It's like... like when you and I are walking around, Skip, it's just going to be to the front, right? That's how it goes.
If they want to keep the show exciting, they need to really clamp down on that and not have every Tom, Dick, and Harry able to get into the show and make it, you know, keep it real, keep it for the buyers, because there's a legitimate, very legitimate buying and, you know, set up your Christmas order kind of thing, and then the press, and leave it at that, and really leave it at that.
Right, but not to to the people that are listening to this, just so that we don't seem like we're complaining here, the net result of that is people are going to get better coverage.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
That's what it's all going to come down to.
Is
I don't give a shit if you're having a hard time walking around E3, because what I care about is if you're not able to cover the stuff that you're charged with covering when you're there and delivering on something that's good, and because there is so much stuff going to be hitting the web that week. Yep. You know, 1UP's going to have a special front door every day. Game Videos is going to be there putting up stuff every 30 seconds or whatever the hell it is. We're going to be doing this podcast every day. There's going to be so much media hitting, which means that everyone has to have access and assets and ways of delivering a particular view on E3. I want people that like the way 1UP does things to come to 1UP and expect us to be able to deliver on the way we do things, on everything that's happening this week. And, you know, if the show is set up all wrong, that's what's going to suffer. And, you know, it's a hard week and it's difficult, but there is a lot of stuff. But the good stuff this year is that hopefully there's going to be potentially hundreds of things that are going to be genuine surprises. And that's going to come across in our reaction to them and in the coverage that we give and the videos. And hopefully we'll be able to, you know, stick developers on camera and maybe get some guests on the podcast, and which would be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And hopefully it's going to be, I think this E3 is going to be potentially the most aggressive ever, because I think the three platform holders are getting meaner about each other than they ever have been before. And that makes the coverage of E3 more interesting, because when everyone's sort of just saying, yes, we really respect what Microsoft has achieved. No, you don't. You hate it. It's like, go for it. Tell us why you're better.
Be rivals.
Yes.
Be a business.
Be rivals. Don't back down. All right. I think we pretty much nailed pre-E3 blues. Mm. That's pretty awesome. So why don't we take a break, come back, and we'll do the news, and we'll get to the Dreamfall thing and some other stuff. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back. You're listening to the 1UP Yours podcast on the 1UP Radio Network. We know you have ears because you're listening to this show, but you also have eyes, and you might want to check out this little thing we'd like to call the 1UP Show. You may have heard of it, you may not have heard of it, but if you have or haven't, you should check it out. It has its own space in our network as well. It's put on by Ryan O'Donnell and the rest of the fabulous video team here, so give us a watch, the 1UP Show. All right, and we're back for the final segment. We got a lot to get into this one. So if you had this short segment before, maybe this one would be a little longer.
Got to shoehorn it in there.
Yeah, got to shoehorn it in there. And we're going to get into, first off, we're going to talk about some review stuff. So
Luke was dying to try and leverage that into something dirty.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh, what?
Do you want to lube it up and put it in there, Luke?
Didn't tell me that was the phrase for this week.
Do you guys want to start again?
Oh, awesome.
Oh, boy.
All right, so now we got the phrase for the weekend. By the way, no one has used their word for the day.
Let's keep it clear.
F earlier.
No,
I said F'd. Yeah. I do the FCC style this week.
Rock and roll. All right, so let's talk about some reviews. Andrew happens to also be the reviews editor.
How convenient.
That is very convenient, isn't it? It's awesome. And we've just kind of eliminated, well, not just kind of, we've eliminated half points. Mm-hmm. We've talked about our 10-point scale. So why don't you kind of give these guys who've been asking about it, why did we do this, and what's the urge to change over to a more stringent criteria come from?
Well, we did it because, in my opinion, in your opinion, and because, I know, we've been talking to Sam and everyone else, and just looking at everybody else's scales, like IGN and GameSpot, IGN and GameSpot mostly, because those are the two entrenched online guys, they have essentially a 100-point scale. But the decimal point kind of fools you into thinking it's 10 points. But it's weird, because you'll see games reviewed by those guys usually between the 7 and 9 range. You go to a game...
So a whole lot of 7s and 9s.
7s and 9s. 7.3, 7.7. And you think about it, it's like, what's the difference between a game that rated 7.3 and 7.7?
Or even 7.3 and 7.4.
Right. That's the more ridiculous thing. But it's like, coming from GMR a couple of years ago, I really thought that we had the best available scale. I don't think there's such a thing as a perfect scale. We've been doing a lot of thinking about it, and I don't think there is a perfect scale. So you have to come up with your own scale and just kind of stick to it. And the whole numbers, 1 through 10, is the best we can do right now. Eventually, I want to get it maybe something that's even in less increments. And I think getting rid of the 0.5s from the 1-up scale is the first step towards that.
Yeah, but so one of the big limiting factors for us, you know, from the managing editor side is that the aggregators that are out there aggregate on 10-point scales. Mm-hmm. So the more you reduce it, the more they're rough coding your review. So if you go to like a 5-star review, mm-hmm. you know, a 3, middle of the road, is like a 60,
that'll get
which
60%.
Is still higher. I mean, really, a 5 should be middle.
Right.
So that would be like a 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
So that's one of
the problem is a lot of people don't see 2.5 out of 5 or 5 out of 10 as average.
Right.
Because everyone's so brought up on the United States grade school system. I don't know how it is in other countries, but 70% is average.
Right. But although
I don't remember, it was so long ago.
But that's really a 4-point grade scale, right? Because an A is a 4,
yeah.
and then a B is a 3, and then 2 and
right.
1 and 0.
It's like you write a really bad paper in school, and what's the difference between a paper that got 40%? In a paper that got like 27%.
Either right. way, I'm getting an ass whooping.
Right.
That's
yeah.
The difference.
Yeah. Yeah. The goal of education is not to get you up to kind of just, oh, okay, you kind of know the material. The goal is to get you up to a high level of comprehension, mm-hmm. like 70% comprehension right. or better.
And the funny thing is, to that, the grade school system of letter grades, I actually like that scale too, because that it doesn't give you the numbers, like the percentage. Like there's no like 0 through 70%. It's like, no, you got a D. And it doesn't matter what range of D you got a D.
Yeah, once a game's fallen off into D world,
yeah.
Do you really give a damn whether it's a 5 right. or a 3 or a 1?
Right.
You just know, you know, whatever.
So,
or a 4 or a 3 or 1 or whatever.
So that's kind of why we did it. Because we want to, it's not that we want to get less accurate. We just want to give more room for each.
And we want it to be meaningful.
Yeah,
I mean, if you see an 8 or a 9 or a 10, mm-hmm. we want you to go, holy crap.
Yeah.
I got to go get this
like
game.
The jump between the 8 and the 9 and the 9 and the 10 is more meaningful when there's not like 9.1 to 9.7.
Yeah, the halves kind of gave us like a crutch, didn't they?
Yeah, well, the thing is, too, is like a 9 versus an 8 is a big difference to me.
Yeah.
And a 9 to a 10 is a big difference. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's like the difference between an 8 and a 9 game, like the scale I used with Skip when I first got here was like a 10 is I'm going to buy it the second it comes out.
Right.
Try and buy it early. A 9, I'm going to buy it the first day. An 8, like, I'm definitely still going to buy it when I can. Mm-hmm. And a 7, like, I'm going to use my parents' money to buy it.
One of the problems that people seem to have with review scores is separating, putting a number on exactly what's good about it versus putting a number on how you feel about it.
Mm.
Because the whole argument that 10 out of 10 isn't perfect, where people say, oh, but it is perfect because you gave it 10 out of 10. That's not saying that every single thing in this
right.
game is right. It's that I can't think of anything wrong with it. I loved it so much. It's and this comes back to everyone saying, I want objective game reviews. You're never going to get from anybody
right.
an objective game review because it's entertainment and it's subjective.
Yeah, it's not even an objective medium.
Right. Isn't a
there's
review
no
che- by default
there's no
subjective?
Checklist,
yeah.
There's no checklist of things to tick off. And if I tick off every one, it's a 10 out of 10. It's, I love this game. I couldn't stop playing it. I know it's got problems, but they don't affect my opinion.
So that's another question they ask us. What is a 10? So what the heck is a 10? What's a 10?
Ikaruga. Really?
What's a 10?
For me? Right now?
Yeah.
Guess.
Oh, boy.
No, but games I've given 10 in the past, too. I believe Soul Calibur 2, I think I gave a 10.
Awesome.
Gran Turismo 3, I gave a 10. On OPM, we did fives.
Right.
And a 5 out of 5 doesn't push people's buttons as much as a 10 mm-hmm. out of 10. I don't know. It's just people are just, you know.
The shorter the scale,
the more people are sort of tolerant of 5 out of 5 just means it's very, very good. Whereas
yeah.
10 out of 10 implies some degree of perfection. And
mm-hmm.
There's always going to be arguments about scores. But we live in a world where things are aggregated, so you have to sort of feed into that because
yeah.
people don't go around every site one by one. They look at RSS readers and aggregators, and they want to see what everything averages out to. And you know, then we get into the inevitable arguments when our opinion differs and we mess with the average. And well, that's
much
good.
Like Dreamfall. The
much like
right. well, we'll
Dreamfall.
Get into that in a minute. But isn't the point of there being so many different media outlets
yeah.
that we're all supposed to have different opinions?
It's scary when everyone like when
if
you
everyone
have all
agrees,
these things,
what's the
yeah.
point?
Yeah, like with Odama, like I thought that like the way that the review sort of evolved, I thought that I was going to end up trending low, and I see the other reviews come out, and like a lot of other publications were in that same like, okay,
mm-hmm. yeah.
in that same range, and then I started to think like, did I miss something?
Well, the games industry feedback from, you know, PR market is always, well, you marked it lower, so clearly there's something wrong here, and my view over everything that we publish is if we do something different, then that's just as valid because we got something different from it. It's not that the guy didn't get it. It's that he didn't respond to it.
Yeah, do you really need to hear 10 guys saying the exact same thing?
Yeah, if everyone agrees, why does there need to be a 1UP, a GameSpot, an IGN, right, and a GamesRadar?
Right.
So,
darn it. Dreamfall.
Yeah, so I totally walked into that one, didn't I? I was very surprised, first off, and happily surprised, because, okay, if you don't know me, I actually really, really value story in games. So it's ironic to see people, oh, you don't get it. You don't understand story in games. I totally get story in games. It's really important to me. I'm playing a game. There's more to a game than all those other things. And so the reason... And I'm not going to rehash the review. I'll talk about like the comments and stuff. The review's up there if you want to read it. The reason it's a 4 is that as a game, it's broken. The story's interesting, but as a game, with all the other elements that go into a story and go into making a game out of it, it needs to have those pieces. If you want to write a movie, edit it. They're different medias, and they have different approaches. And I thought that was really important because we loved Indigo Prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And Indigo Prophecy got the formula right. It was so compelling. I loved the game. I mean, and so you go back and go, well, why'd you only give it an 8? Well, if you get to the end of Indigo Prophecy, the ending of it speaks for itself as to why I only got an 8. But we'll just leave it at that. We're not... One of the reasons my review doesn't go into the story of Dreamfall is that would be a great disservice to anyone who wants to play it. That is the core of the game. And if you like the game, if you like the adventure genre... The game is well written. Ragnar knows what he's doing. And if you haven't looked at his website, you should go check it out. I have a link in my blog to his blog. He writes some cool stuff. But so where do we go with this? I mean, one of these guys, Brett Martin, wrote this equation. I don't know that I necessarily agree with this. He says good story plus bad gameplay is bad game. Bad story plus good gameplay equals okay game. Good story plus good gameplay equals good game.
Disagree. Could I actually look at that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right,
no,
right,
I actually want to see
this
that
one right here. This one right here.
Okay, bad story plus good gameplay equals good game. It does.
Really?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's look at Ninja Gaiden for Xbox.
Or Black.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to mention Ninja Gaiden and Black in the same breath.
God love Alex Ward, but he wrote the story like in a weekend in a hotel room, and it totally shows. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it undermines the game.
But to the point earlier on, it's the visceral part of that game is so good that it overcomes it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes,
like
it does.
The Ninja Gaiden story. Like, really? A story? Like,
what is the story of Ninja Gaiden?
I don't know, because the story of Ninja Gaiden,
awesome,
to me, is the original story on the NES, which I would argue ushered in the cinematic era of the video game.
Ninja Gaiden story to me, as far as I can remember, is walk into environment, get shit kicked out of you repeatedly.
No, it was
walk. Got my Ninja Gaiden t-shirt on right now.
Yeah. Dude, I need to get mine on.
Yeah, right there, Ninja.
For sure.
Ninja.
See, we, you know, freebies.
Freebies, yeah.
But no, like Ninja Gaiden, story, really? There was a story to this game? No, the story was non-existent. Sorry, Team Ninja. But the gameplay, awesome.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me break that, though, for a second. Story as an overarching thing, maybe not so great, but story as a get swept up in it and get incorporated into these cool scenes that set the stage for what you're doing? Yeah, come on.
Okay. Well,
you're talking about story as motivation versus story as fluff.
I'm talking about story as narrative, as a force that's aiding you being propelled through the game. And
right.
A Ninja Gaiden, that's not what it was.
Right.
Save the girl with giant boobs and a sickle. Go. And you're like, all right.
You didn't need it to be a story, but in this game...
Oh, yeah, you needed the story.
It's all about the story.
Okay, so if you want me to talk about the story about the game in Dreamfall for a little bit, it's very simple. If you look at Indigo Prophecy, it was brilliantly cut where every time you moved forward in the story progression, you were compelled to keep playing the game. I could hardly put the damn controller down. This game was not cut as well. It's not edited as well. It doesn't have...
I played Indigo Prophecy in like 3 or 4 sittings. I mean,
because you couldn't put it down.
Yeah.
And this, and one of the other weaknesses of Dreamfall in the story is that it's not cut together as well. It's an interesting story. It almost has too many imaginative hooks to it. It goes all sorts of different directions into mysticism and sci-fi, and it has a lot of ideas that are interesting, but it's not cut together so compellingly. You don't feel, oh my gosh, I can't put the controller down with it. And so that's why not only is it not a 5, it's broken. You know, it's just broken. And that's where it's at. I know some of you guys and gals disagree. Yes, I love story, but you have to have a package. We're playing games here. There are different medias for different reasons. When someone mentioned Fahrenheit 9/11, this one's great. You guys, carry for a second, because I want to find this other comment in here.
So stories were supposed to fill the gap, and you're looking at your cell phone. That's good. This is great. Sorry, kids. So give me an example. So the other thing to talk about with story is that there are plenty of games that are great that don't have a story. Like I said at the top of the segment, like a 10 for me is Ikaruga. It's a I think it's a true 10 from this generation. And the story? What? Really? So you found your comment.
Yeah, so this is from Maris Draconis. He says, I think people have basically said what I wanted to say, which is if you felt the story felt down, why didn't you even mention the story? Well, I did mention the story at the end, and I told you if you liked it, you'd go on to it. We're not going to give up the story in the game. But then this is the part that's crazy. The usual defense here is that, but games are supposed to be fun. Are movies always supposed to be fun? Was Fahrenheit 9/11 fun? No, comedies are fun because that's their point. How is storytelling in games supposed to be able to do more than it does if you've got people standing on the sidelines ready to smack it down if it's too much of an interactive story, but not if it's too much pure gameplay? That's unfair in my mind. Holy crap! Yes, games are supposed to be fun! Jesus!
Wow.
Have you seen that vein on Garnett's head again?
What on earth?
That came from pretty deep.
What on earth kind of question is that? No, I want to play games that aren't fun because why? Well, I'm actually a masochist.
Would you like to play From Russia with Love?
What the hell?
You still have Adama.
Fahrenheit 9/11 is not a entertainment movie. It was a, well, we're not going to get into like That's what kind of film he produces, that. But it was a docu-mockumentary. And National Geographic Channel or whatever shows different kinds of televisions that are entertainments like that. But games are entertainments. Do you want, does anyone here, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I went a little hyper there, but what do you think?
About games.
Are games supposed to be fun?
Yeah, I mean, games are supposed to be fun, but I had
fun is a pretty broad term as well. I mean, you could argue that...
I like saying entertainment.
Entertainment is better, because, I mean, you know,
okay.
Fahrenheit 9/11 was entertainment.
Well, yes, it was.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm in entertainment too, but okay.
Watching
so
the History Channel is entertainment. I mean, there's you know, and I think that's people get sort of too, everything about games. People want to pigeonhole desperately,
right.
And we shouldn't. It's like
it's
you want to sit down in front
movies.
Of it, and you need it. You need to be absorbed by it.
Everyone has their own individual reasons for being entertained by a game, and it's different between TV and movies and books and music and games.
And what you
absolutely
different ways to be
that
entertained
is the
by
big deal.
And some people are just entertained the wrong way.
Right,
and
the purpose of a review is to try and take a stab at explaining why you were or weren't
to
entertained, and be able to justify it.
Right,
people don't have to agree with you. They also don't have to agree with what entertains you and what doesn't. But if that comes across in the review, then they can make an informed choice.
Exactly.
You like this kind of thing, and you didn't like this.
Right.
I can relate to that. I'm probably not interested.
All right, so there you go. That's a whole big thing on reviews, and I'm sure we're going to get some comments on the forum, so I'll look forward to that. And let's move on. Let's do some news stuff. Mr. Smith.
Well, let's start with what we talked about last week to the kid who just picked up a PS2. Mm-hmm. Take your receipt back to Best Buy and get $20 back because it dropped to $129.99. That's not an announced price drop until, I believe the date was April 27th. So go back now. The price is effective immediately. They'll announce it. Like, it'll be in the flyers on April
27th. Does anyone else think that $20 now is lame?
Absolutely.
I agree.
I completely agree. I think it's bullshit.
They're just like a little sliver. It's just like, we're not going to go to 99 yet. No.
Just we're just
going to eat that extra $29 out of you just for now.
It's totally marketing so that at Christmas to once again promote, they can come back and say, oh, now we're going to go to 99. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed to happen.
Little. You normally cut a price to stimulate sales. I'm not sure if this is going to have the desired effect.
Well, yeah, if you want to get a second PlayStation 2... Or a skinny one.
To that point, are you going to bother going back with your receipt for $20?
No, probably not. That's, no.
I mean, people are lazy. They don't even send in their rebates, so how many of them are going to go back and get their
$20? Spend $10 in gas driving back to the store.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now, yeah.
So there's a little sort of nugget this morning about how there's some upgrades coming in the chip tech for the Xbox 360 CPU. An upgrade's kind of like a relative term. It's more like a refinement. What that upgrade is going to do, it's a really techie press release, and we linked it in the news story if you want to go try and like pick it apart. Ultimately, what it means is the Xbox 360 CPU is going to be a little bit more optimized. It should run a little cooler, but the most important part is that it's going to be a little cheaper to produce.
That's the cool part.
So, it sort of pre-positions Microsoft
So price drop, and you're not going to set fire to your entertainment unit.
Yeah, which is sort of like...
That's all I need in a box.
Sort of a win-win for late adopters like myself. So now it's like, I'm just going to adopt, you know, maybe a little later. Just
this
keep,
is typical.
Keep holding off.
Totally typical in the tech world. I mean, if you watched AMD processors in their Athlon line, they had the same thing happen where they, as they get new plants online, they bring the die size down. It doesn't change the function of the chip, just makes it run a little more efficiently power-wise.
That's what they did with the PS2 as well. I mean, when they squeezed everything into that little... sliver.
And sort of the last thing, which I guess I know we're shy on time, so we'll scratch the surface of it a little bit, was a story that we wrote earlier this week about an advertisement that appears in EGM that Ubisoft put together for Splinter Cell Essentials. And the advertisement has text from GameSpy that says, one of the best games for PSP, which raised an eyebrow over at a blog called Red Ass Baboon, and some people started to ask some questions about it. So we looked into it a little further and found that GameSpy scored... Splinter Cell Essentials 2 out of 5, which is not one of the best games on the PSP, and dug a little deeper and found that they had some text in the preview, in a preview that was written, that was sort of like snipped and edited and condensed. And so we wrote about that and solicited a comment from GameSpy and Ubisoft, who declined. And that sort of generated a little bit of fervor, I guess, and...
Just to be clear, GameSpy didn't decline. It was Ubisoft that declined.
No, yeah, Ubisoft declined. GameSpy, John Kiefer, editorial director over there, sent a lengthy email, which we published in the news story. So if you didn't see it, check it out. And he sort of explains why it happened the way it did. But it presents a greater issue. And that greater issue is the way we as gamers, which I think everyone in the room is first and foremost, are being marketed to. And are we being marketed to in a way that's fair to both the gamer and the product? And I guess that I want to hear what you guys have to think about that.
That's a pretty big topic, Dave.
That is a pretty big topic.
In fact, I think we should use this as something to sort of stimulate some message board stuff and come back to it next week, because there's a lot to talk about here, and there's a lot the way that it reflects on us and as the games meet, not just 1UP or GameSpy, but just games media and assumptions that people make about it when things like this happen, because it kind of, I mean, it pisses me off that there's assumption that we're on the take when we're not.
Right. Yeah, well, you and I have had probably hours of conversation about this at this point.
And, you know, I'm sick of reading on message boards that, you know, all games magazines are, you know, they have no ethics and they have no... It sickens me, particularly when we have such strict rules about this kind of thing and you know, all the other big media outlets do as well. GameSpot has very strict guidelines. IGN has strict guidelines.
You have to have
rules just to stop people doubting you, but they still do. And then something like this happens, and it's a tiny little thing, but, you know, the thing that the Red Ass Baboon blog made the assumption that, you know, it was all about money. And it wasn't. It was a mistake. It was a dumb thing, and it was a mistake, and it happened, and you know, yeah.
It's a good...
I kind of ran out of steam there, didn't I? But a misrepresentation was made.
Yeah, but what that is, what that small sort of misrepresentation is it's a good jumping off point to a pretty serious discussion. I mean, because news is my thing. Like, objectivity, being fair, treating everything as evenly as possible is so important. And to not have taken a pass on a story like that, I think would have been doing a disservice, especially because it's the gamers who we're trying to look out for, you know, ultimately. And, like, I want them to be aware of what is going on.
Similarly, if one of our guys did it, I would want to raise it as well. I don't want to shy away from it. It was in EGM. But if I okayed a quote that made us look stupid, or if Shu did, or Sam, I would still want to call us out and be able to say, yeah, oops, sorry, you know, this is the process that happened, just to sort of give people an insight into how these things come up. I mean, we don't approve quotes that often, and usually we try and be... But that's not the issue. The quote thing is whatever. And John Kiefer was extremely cool for responding.
That was great.
Because
I was thrilled that he
responded. A lot of people in that position would have ignored it and hoped that it would go away, and he didn't. And that was very cool of him.
All right.
So next week, what do we want to hear the kids have to say about that?
How they feel about the way that they're marketed to. I mean, tell us how ads, screenshots, the things that you see,
target videos.
Oh, God.
We're coming
videos.
Up to E3. There's going to be, potentially, as we come into E3, the one thing that you potentially might feel is that you're being lied to a lot over the next couple of months. So let's talk about that.
How would you like to be marketed to? That's what I want to know. Like, I want to know what sort of an advertisement as far as games, because there's also, and I know we're running out of time, sorry. There's also a big controversy right now over the Hitman ad that features the, have you guys seen this ad?
No.
There's this Hitman ad for, I think, what's the new one? Like Hitman Contracts, Killing More whatever. People or something. It's a woman who's wearing like a nightie and she's sprawled across a bed.
Oh, beautifully executed
like,
or whatever?
Yeah, and she's dead with a bullet hole in her head and she's wearing like, and so.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, but so there's this big controversy now because it's, people are wondering if this is like perpetuating some sort of rape myth or if this woman was like sexualized and killed. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. So
But there's a whole series of those ads. There's a sort of classically something or other, and there's a guy with a cello with his neck cut, yeah?
Yeah, like, so how do people want to be marketed to? How do you want to be and
What kind of filters do you have set up to see through all the BS?
And this, it would have played nicely to talk about the PGR in-game thing, too, this week. Maybe next week. Maybe
all
next
week. The Cadillacs, the free Cadillacs.
And the my source, not Microsoft, says that that's true. And that's gonna go down, which is pretty exciting.
Wait, a Cadillac-sponsored pack?
Yeah, a Cadillac-sponsored pack for Project Gotham Racing 3 that will be free.
Oh.
A car pack that's free and combines in-game advertising, which is pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll look to hear from you when we're back next week. Hopefully you're listening to us through one of the many ways to get us, like Yahoo or Odeo or iTunes. And if you are, if I can ask, if you dig what you're listening to, give us a review and help some other people out there join our community, listen to what you're listening to, gets more people in on what we're talking about. And EGM.
CGW? I forgot I had a mic. We're actually working on the new CGW EGM.
You can speak. It's okay.
Oh, boy.
A producer. CGW, EGM, and OPM are all working on their new podcast shows, and hopefully CGW has been running for a while now, right. But EGM
So when
and OPM
we say One Up Network Radio, we are actually talking about...
Seriously.
That's right.
A network of radio shows rather than just us babbling for half an hour every week.
Am I on all those, too?
Yeah, we've booked you.
Yeah, we booked you in on all of them.
You the man.
All right. And do news.
So until next Friday... We're out.
This has been What Up Yours, a production of the Ziff Davis Game Group and part of the What Up Network. What Up Yours is hosted by Garnet Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Pfister and Mike Ng, and is published every Friday afternoon via the iTunes Music Store and from its home at oneup.com.